If you have your own story of being in a cult or a high control group,
or if you've had experience with manipulation or abuse of power that you'd like to share,
leave us a message on our hotline number at 347-86-TRUST.
That's 347-868-7878.
Or shoot us an email at trustmepod@gmail.com.
Trust me.
Dude, you trust me.
Trust me. I'm like a smart person.
Yeah, I've never lied to you. I never have lied to you.
If you think that one person has all the answers,
don't!
Welcome to Trust Me, the podcast about cults, extreme belief, and manipulation from two actors who've actually experienced it. I'm Lola Blanc.
And I am Megan Elizabeth.
And today, our guest is Abigail Kachunas. She is a former member of Gloria Gifford's Conservatory for the Performing Arts, which Megan also attended.
What?
They'll both share stories of what they saw and were subjected to, including classes that would go on for hours, public humiliation, the unusual levels of control Gloria had over her members' lives, and more.
Abigail will share how much money and time she invested into her education with Gloria and missing nearly every Christmas with her family for over a decade. We'll also discuss Gloria's ties to Scientology and the Hollywood Reporter article in which numerous former students spoke out.
Yes, lots to get into today. Very relevant to the lives of Angelinos. I fucking hate the term Angelino. Why do I hate that so much? The lives of people living in LA.
Yeah, it's not cool.
It's not cool, and we will get into all of it shortly.
And we will tell you why it's not cool, but first.
We will. But first, let's talk about what is cool or maybe is not cool, depending. What is your cool juice thing this week?
Okay, I kept mine kind of in the arts related, but I've been seeing online that this artist in London, his name is Damien Hirst. He made these special like dot paintings, right? And he said you can either keep it as an NFT and burn the original, or you can keep the original and he takes away the NFT. So it kind of started, from what I'm reading, this people got culty about it, apparently. Like the arguments between, is something material more valuable than something that's not, got really heated. So it's very interesting. The art world can get very culty very quickly. And
So basically he's saying like that my art can only exist in one form or the other. And you can choose if you buy it.
People who only believe in physical art get very upset at the idea of you burning it. Because he has this gallery right now that he just put $36 million into revamping, where he's just burning his art if people chose to keep the NFTs. And they say he looks very much like a high priestess or something, like burning all this shit. And all these people are waiting in line to watch it happen. But then he goes, but people who believe in NFTs celebrate when you burn the actual paintings. So those people are choosing to have it exist in a different realm. And it sparked stuff for people.
What did it spark for you?
I mean, I guess just this deep, deep distrust of NFTs. I'm very much that you shouldn't burn physical artwork, and that, you know.
Me too.
It feels bad.
Are we being antiquated and old? Like,
I guess, yeah, we're old.
But I'm like, something just like inherently, if there's only one of it versus many, many easily reproducible copies, like, isn't that,
yeah,
the scarcity of that, doesn't that inherently create more value?
Okay, so they cost £1,700, but then now they're worth £42,000, the NFTs.
I just like, I hear NFT and I hear crypto and like my eye twitches and I don't,
yeah,
like I know that. That's not like, I know I'm probably just like living in the past or whatever, but that is that, like, I'm like, I don't like it.
It's not for me. It kind of brought up some like, wow, the future's scary, but you know, it's fine. What about you?
I mean, deep fakes. Yeah, well,
I know.
What about me? Okay, so I realized that I am a very strong and firm believer in nonviolent communication. Do you know about this, like, book and practice and stuff?
Is it for raising children or is it something different?
It's for any kind of relationship communication. It can, like, it's used in schools, jails, relationships, like whatever.
Yeah, sure.
Wherever you need to communicate, which is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. This guy who invented it, in quotes, he's just like made a concrete system out of what all therapists say anyway, which is like speak in I statements, validate each other's feelings, make clear asks of your partner or whatever. But it's just like basically a shortcut. I feel like I didn't even finish the book, but I know the basic principles and I've read a good chunk of it. It's just a shortcut as opposed to having to explain, like, well, here's why you need to, like, because it may make people feel validated. Like, it just makes it really clear what is the best form of communication to not make people defensive and to make them feel heard and, like, have actual constructive communication.
Cool.
Yeah, and I just realized that the way that I talk about it is a little bit culty. Because I'm just always like, well, have you read this book? Well, have you read this book? Well, you know, you're having problems. There's this great book. But it's, again, it's like, it's not that it's the book that it's just like, it boils down these principles. So the model is when I see that blank, I feel blank because my need for blank is or is not met. Would you be willing to blank? So it's just like you're saying very specifically, when you do this thing or when I see this thing, it makes me feel this other thing, as opposed to just saying you suck.
Right. Right.
You make me feel bad. It's like, no, this specific action makes me feel this specific thing because there's a need that I have. So would you make an alteration in the future? I feel like most communication goes wrong when we're just like, you did this, but you did this, but you did this, mm-hmm. but you did this. And we all are just like, our identities, we're getting like those identity hits that our sociopath guests talked about that one time, where we just like don't feel like we're being valued or understood or heard. Anyway, it's a great shortcut to like just learning how to be a better communicator, in my opinion. I'm in the NVC cult, you guys.
Ooh, I love it. I'm gonna read it. I haven't yet.
I feel like every person in a relationship should read it. Even when I listen to Esther Perel. Have you heard that podcast?
No.
Where should we begin?
I thought you were gonna say Esther Hicks from Abraham Hicks and I got excited. Nope.
Definitely was not. No, Esther Perel is a relationship sex therapist woman who wrote this book called Mating in Captivity, which is just about how we, you know, whatever, intimacy and passion are sort of conflicting needs. Anyway, she has this great podcast about relationships. And when you hear her talk to her clients, like this stuff just organically comes up. Like the healthiest way to communicate looks kind of the same every time. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of talk about it differently depending on who our therapist is or what book we read or whatever.
Interesting. I can't wait to read it.
Yeah, that's all. That's my spiel.
Well, should we get into the spiel on Gloria?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Welcome, Abigail Kachunas.
Thank you.
To Trust Me. Thank you for being here and for joining us in person, which is so nice. Yep. We don't get to do that very often.
Yeah, it's nice.
Wow, we have a lot to get into,
yes.
And I cannot wait to hear the details.
I mean,
you guys, this is something that Megan is going to be able to participate in the discussion of because Megan was also a part of this class for 6 months. So, Abigail, why don't you start us off by telling us, what was this acting class? How did you hear of it? What was going on in your life?
I had recently moved to LA. I was just like working in a restaurant, trying to find an acting class. I was like, I should be in acting class. I want to take this seriously. And I was just asking people that I worked with. And I asked a couple of coworkers and they gave me some suggestions. And I think I interviewed at two places and her school was one of them. Did we say her name? Sorry.
No, we haven't.
Tell us who her is.
Gloria Gifford Conservatory.
Okay.
Gloria Gifford is the teacher.
Mm-hmm. Goosebumps.
And she was teaching in Italy at the time. So I didn't meet her. And I interviewed with two of her veteran students. One of them was a veteran for I'm guessing, at least 15 years.
Does his name start with a B?
Yes.
Okay, great. That's who veteraned me.
That's who veteraned you?
It's a new verb.
And he was one of the officers of her class. Officer just meaning he has specific responsibilities. There were different officers. There were ethics officers, finance officers, bookings officer. Before I left, I was one of the officers. I was a bookings officer, which means you were responsible for booking the scenes. Anyway, interviewed with him and another girl who she was just a student, and she later became my friend. She's also no longer in the class. And every question that I asked, they seemed to have the answer that made sense to me. And I thought, okay, I'm going to give this a try. And I was in class for maybe a month or two before she returned. And when she returned, we like went into the theater. Mm-hmm. And I remember like where I was sitting when she walked in, like it's like imprinted in my brain. And everyone like stood up and was like, whoa, and like applauding and clapping and cheering. And I'm like, oh, that's wow. Okay, great. You know, I'm excited too. You kind of like get the high of it. And I remember meeting her and feeling that she was like very powerful and very charismatic. And she was very direct, very outspoken, a little bit controversial, like not afraid to say stuff. And I was like, whoa, I love that. You know what I mean? Like just kind of wild and out there. And so it was very attractive to me because where I was in my life is I had come out of modeling in New York as a teenager. And I decided I was going to finish school, went to school. And I thought, God, I still got this like itch. Like I thought I didn't want to be in the business. And I was like, no, I want to be in the business. So I came to LA and I was feeling a little lost, a little like spastic. And, you know, I was still like drinking and I was trying to remove drugs from my life. And I was like, I need to be in a good, positive environment. And that's what that felt like. So I was already in a position of feeling like I need some help and some assistance to get better and get clearer. And it seemed like the right environment. So that's how I ended up there and was primed for what followed.
Uh-huh. And I will, I mean, priming is a perfect word for it. For example, I will, one of the first exercises I remember her having us do was like telling all of our secrets.
Oh, God.
Before we dive into the goings on, first of all, like, it's so funny. I feel like just today someone was like, oh, have you heard about the so-and-so acting workshop? That got really culty. Like, this is a thing in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because for most cults, like, there's some specific reason that you'd want to join or think that they're offering whatever. For actors, you're just kind of supposed to be working on your acting. You're supposed to join an acting class. There's nothing, like, broken in you that leads you to join an acting class. It's just, like, what you do to work on your craft unless you're auditioning every fucking day, which no one is unless they're incredibly lucky and fuck that person.
and they're ongoing. Yeah. And it's ongoing, too. Like, there's no – and then you graduate.
Right. Because it's, like, you're supposed to always be keeping that muscle warm. Mm-hmm. It's not, like, a skill that you just go to school for fucking accounting and then you know how to account. Like, no. It's, like, an emotional thing. You have to tap into it. So you need – the thinking is that you need to be always – brushing up on how to get to that place emotionally.
Like how a yogi will go to yoga class. You want to stay loose and flexible and, you know, whatever. It's part of your training, I guess.
Yeah. Megan, how did you end up going?
I went to a – God, okay. I went to a movie screening and I sat by this guy and he was like, it would be so fun if you tried acting. Have you ever tried it? Because I started talking to him about being raised without a television and all this stuff. And I was like, no, never. I don't want to be an actor. And he was like, I know this woman. She is so amazing and you should go to her class because it's not just acting. It's like a lifestyle and – whatever.
Oh, it is
and
a lifestyle.
I was like, oh, okay. I'll go like meet some cool people and learn under this woman you think is so cool. So I drove out to the valley and it was at her house.
Yes, it was at her house in the beginning.
Mm. And you were already in it when I came in. This was like 15, 16 years ago, which is so wild.
And what did you think when you first joined? Like, how did it feel? Was it helpful?
I found it very helpful, and I'll go into more of this later, but she would talk a lot about Scientology without saying it was Scientology in class, and I was kind of intrigued by that because I grew up very, like, spiritually and religiously aware. I was always, like, learning about different religions, just that's how my parents raised me, kind of to be open-minded and practice different things, you know, pagan, Buddhism, Christianity, everything.
Sick.
So I was very like open, like, oh, what's this? Okay, I want to learn about this because I'm a seeker. I just want to know the answers to the universe. And she would talk about these things, and I was like, huh, okay, all right, that's interesting. And I would ask her about them. And she also spent a lot of one-on-one time with me, which some people will call love bombing. I didn't know what that term was until recently in the last year or so. So she would pay a lot of attention to me. I remember she invited me to go with her to see an old student's play and then took me out to dinner. And that's where I was like, I kept asking her about the Scientology. She was like, well, I'll take you there. You know, and so, you know, I went, and of course, like, because it's Celebrity Center and she's a celebrity, you get like the red carpet treatment. Like, you go in through the president's office, which isn't the way the public enters. So it's like a whole thing. So I felt
Scientology 2.0.
So I just felt very like taken care of and very looked after. And, you know, she would sit with you after class and like have a conversation with you. I remember one time I was really upset about something. She took me out to dinner. She asked me these very personal questions about my life and a very private traumatic event that happened to me when I was 19. And I just shared everything because I felt like I trusted her. She was very empathetic and very, you know, just listening and always seemed to have a solution or an answer. And she was very motivational in the way that she spoke and very inspirational in terms of like getting your career going. And this is how you do it. And anyone can do it. And, you know, her story of like, I was the first black woman at Bloomingdale's to be an executive, and I integrated Daytona Beach, Florida. And, you know, she would tell these stories in her open classes, like in class all the time. So you think, wow, look at this, you know, single mother who was on Broadway 4 years after she started acting. Like, that's drive and that's incredible. I want to be around that. And to be fair, I did learn to act in that class.
Right.
If that's something you can actually learn. I think it's more like sculpting your natural talent.
Yeah.
But there's skills and a craft, absolutely. And I did learn that there. But yeah, and I found it to be all of those things. And I was learning a lot. And it gave me a purpose. And it gave me a sense of belonging. And it gave me a community. Because I had the class. So you had your scene partner. So you were rehearsing. So it gave you something to do. So instead of just being like, all I'm doing is going to some dumb side job and being miserable, you're like, oh, you know, I finished my side job and I get to go home and read this script and I have a movie of the week I have to watch and I have all this research to do. Mm-hmm. So it gave you something like artistic fulfillment.
Right. And as actors who are only actors and just focused on acting, like so much of your life is like waiting for someone to pick you for an audition and just like hoping. And there's just like isn't a lot of like I know a lot of people who end up feeling really aimless because they're like, I'm just fucking waiting.
I'm just
like,
floating.
What do I do?
Yeah, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
And not everybody wants to write or direct their own stuff.
Yeah. I mean, half the people I know started doing that out of necessity because they weren't getting acting jobs. They're like, I'm not going to just sit here.
I have to do something.
Yeah. So acting class is one of the ways in which many actors like get to use their skills and feel creative and have purpose, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So go on.
Yeah. Gave me purpose, gave me a sense that I was working towards a goal. She was very I think you might remember this, Megan, with the admin. So like mailing out a postcard and like reaching out to casting directors. I mean, the business has changed so much just in that time. She always had something for you to do, to take an action that you could take so that you felt like you were in control of your career. That was a big, like, I guess I'll say tenet of her teaching.
Huge.
And then also having, you know, been interested in the Scientology and asking her about that and then finding that and then deciding, yeah, this is something I want to do. I want to explore this. And, you know, one of the first starter courses they put you on is personal values and integrity, which is, you know, you write out all of your crimes, the things that you feel like were wrong that you did.
Wow.
Yeah. You're like a red flag alarm bells are going off like, what? Yes, you write them down and you turn them in.
Oh, no.
And they go in a file.
What? They go in a file?
I mean, I've never murdered anyone, so honestly, like, I don't
care.
It's
all good.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's fine. I mean, I'm not an angel, but I've done some things that I'm like, that was really shitty. But you know what? At the end of the day, who hasn't?
Right.
Yeah. File? What did she tell you guys was the purpose of this?
Well, that was at the church. So that's how.
Oh, sorry. Is that Scientology?
Yeah.
What were some of the things that she was saying that were like hitting you from her Scientology perspective?
Well, she would talk a lot about people like suppressing you, or you that you were suppressed, and that's why you weren't where you wanted to be in life. She would often make friends or family the suppressor in your life.
So good.
Was there isolation in terms of, like, she would say your friends and family were being suppressive? Like,
yeah,
if
it depended.
They did what?
So it depended on, like, obviously in the beginning, she was really super nice to everyone in the beginning. And, like, the screaming and the yelling and the tough critiques didn't really start until a few years in. So I remember the first, it was like 2 years in before I first experienced, like, full on rage. And it was in private when I was driving her somewhere. So it depended on, like, the background that the person came from, because she would often in the beginning get to know you very deeply, get to know most people that came to class. If they were in a relationship that was not a marriage, they often broke up with their significant other shortly after joining. A lot of my friends that are no longer in the class were just convinced that their mother or their father or both were the reason that they were being stopped in life. Or that friend's not really helping you. They're just jealous, and that's why they're doing that. And she would have a public talk in class about, you know, your parents love you and they care about you, and everyone has their own limited beliefs. That's a big, like, buzzword right now, but she's been using it forever. And she'd say they love you, and even they might be scared and in fear, and by default give you advice that's not helpful to you. So she would say that in the grand scheme of things.
But she's giving you sometimes helpful advice.
She would come in a critique or in private and be like, oh, well, they don't really want you to succeed. And so, or you're just studying with someone else. Oh, you're studying with your boyfriend, you're not hearing me. Or you're studying with your father and you're not hearing me. And you're studying. So, it eventually you start, and this was just my experience. I know a couple other friends who've had a similar experience, but my experience was that I started to question, like, my parents, and were they really helpful? So I would want to not call them as much because I was afraid they would say something that would throw me off or suppress me, even if they weren't suppressive.
Right.
Because you can do suppressive things and not be suppressive, but you can also then also be a suppressive person. So in general, it was like smoke in your ear almost in terms of how she would phrase it or word it. So then you would start to think, wait a minute, maybe that person's trying to stop me. And then all of a sudden, the only person that you do trust is her.
Right. Oh, my God. Yeah, classic isolation moves.
Yeah.
So tell us about how do you phrase this question? When did things start to get weird?
Get weird?
Yeah.
Get weirder.
Get weirder. It's funny because I had asked you, like, what should I prepare to say? I feel like there's so much. The first thing that really shifted for me was the time when I was driving her and she, like, broke out into a rage. And I actually thought I was going to have a car accident and go off the road. Like, I was terrified because I'd never experienced that kind of rage directed at me in my life. I thought she was going to hit me. Like, I didn't know what was going to happen. And after I dropped her off, I don't remember if I received an email or if she had a close friend of mine that was in the class call me, but it was basically like, well, you really fucked up and you did this and, you know, now you're going to have to make amends. Making amends was a huge thing. That's a Scientology term.
So, an AA term.
Yeah. Well, it's really fucked up in this regard. In this regard, making amends is a little bit different. I remember I felt so awful. I was physically sick to my stomach. And this time, I didn't know that trauma gets stored in the body, the whole fight or flight response and how you can loop into that cycle physically and stay in that and not get out of it. So I was getting physically ill because I was so – I thought I was a bad person. I thought I was terrible, that I was a loser.
Oh, no.
And I was like –
Wait, but what was she saying that you did wrong? Like, what was your sin?
That I had unexpressed resentment towards her. And she was saying, I think you're jealous of so-and-so. We were coming back from a rehearsal, and I was an understudy in this play to someone else. And she was saying that I was jealous and that I resented her, and that's why I was, like, acting out or making mistakes or not hearing her.
That you resented the other actress?
No, that I resented her.
Gloria, okay.
Right. So
why?
And I was like,
because she wasn't the main part.
Oh, because Gloria is the one who decided.
Okay, I see. Yeah. So I was like, okay, well, maybe, because I'm very much like...
you want to clean up your side of the road.
Yeah,
you're like, awesome,
exactly.
Great.
I'm all about, and I'm still that way. I'm still like, self-help, let's go. I'm just a lot more skeptical about the source now.
So I thought, wow, I really fucked up,
you know, and like kind of into this like self-punishment thing. And I kind of was like, oh, I really fucked up. And then you can get handled by other officers in the class. It's like, well, yeah, Abigail, you're going to probably have to do this, or maybe you could do this. And I wrote her a letter and I left her a card and she didn't speak to me. She didn't respond to my emails. And then I think she just started talking to me again in class like nothing had happened. Or we later on had a conversation about it. It was a long time ago. It was 12 years ago, so it's really hard to remember the details. Yeah. I just remember the unexpressed resentment, and then I finally was like, okay, well, maybe I have it. And then it was like, boom, explosion of rage. And I was like, what?
Whoa. So I'm hearing jargon. I'm hearing a lot of jargon that is clearly specific to this group and or Scientology, of terms that only people in the group would know. I'm hearing unpredictability and like putting you in the position of needing to always like be better and work on yourself, and you're not there yet and you have to prove yourself to her, and like then, you know, you don't know when she's gonna be mad at you or not, then you're just like always gonna be on edge and always like having to try to prove something because it's never gonna be enough. What would trigger her moments of rage? Would it be like something someone said? Would it be like, did she feel like she'd been caught, like someone was trying to interrupt her power? Like,
yeah, that's hard, because sometimes it would come out in a critique where she would just lay into somebody and you're like, whoa, okay, rough. Like, there was an instance where we were in class at her house and there was a student that was talking back to her, a male student, and he started arguing, and she was like, that's your problem because you have a mouth and da-da. And it turned into this knockdown, drag-out, verbal assault that went from the inside to the outside. And Megan was crying. She was like, this isn't okay. Yes. Do you remember this?
No, I don't know.
She doesn't remember. You've blocked it from your memory.
You were crying.
You were really, really upset because you were sitting next to me, and you were like – and you were like – terrified. You were like, this isn't okay. And they were screaming on the on her front lawn.
Like, so crazy.
And I was like, I'd never seen that. I'd never seen that. I mean, for all intents and purposes, I grew up in a stable home.
Right,
I mean,
right.
I feel like everyone has fucking childhood trauma, okay, to one degree or another. But for the most part, like, there was no, like, yelling or physical abuse in my home. So this was a very different environment, and I kind of didn't know what to do about it.
Were people kind of chalking it up to like, well, she's unfiltered. This is like her way.
Yeah,
she's from New York.
Yeah, that she's from New York. It's tough love. And I kind of likened it to like, oh, well, it's like military training almost. So if you have your loyalty and you're tough and you're strong, then you're just going to prove yourself and you're going to go out there and you can work for anyone. And she would always tell this story of a student of hers who was working in Titanic. Maybe he wasn't an extra, but he –
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it was Leo. But he had a role in Titanic. And she said that he tells her a story of like, yeah, James Cameron got on the megaphone and he was like screaming at some of these extras. And so she would kind of tell stories to like support her behavior, I guess. As like, guys, I'm just preparing you
I'm
for
just
what's
James
out there.
Cameron, yeah.
Right. Okay.
Fine.
This makes me think of one of the quotes from the article. So y'all, if you want to read more about the situation and get kind of other perspectives on this story, The Hollywood Reporter came out with a piece about it. They interviewed a lot of different people for it. It is called Post-Traumatic Stress, Ex-Students Decry Nightmare Acting Coach. So in this article, a woman named Mary Angelica Cuervo, did you know her?
Yeah, Mary Angelica, yeah.
Mary Angelica, who spent 2 years at the conservatory beginning in 2012, says she related to the 2014, I'm quoting the article, related to the 2014 film Whiplash, which centered on J.K. Simmons' frightening jazz instructor. This is her quote. I thought, that's like Gloria, but the guy in the movie is like 10% of Gloria. She was way worse.
I haven't seen that movie.
Oh, my God.
Now I know why.
It's one of my favorite movies.
I feel like I should watch it now.
Yeah.
You guys, he is very extreme in that movie. So
oh
if she's 10% of her, that's like terrifying.
She's a... absolute
like a caricature
of someone who's going to
really get in your head.
Like drill it into you.
Yeah.
Like, tough
just
love.
Like I said at the beginning, being like one of the first exercises, like what's
break
the
you
worst
down
thing
to
that's
build
ever
you
happened
up.
To you? And I just remember us all sitting in a group, and she was like, let's just say our deepest secrets and like 10 things we never want. And I was like, why does she want this from us?
Well, because she would say those things later.
Yeah, because she was going to use it.
In a critique in public and share personal private information about you without your permission to a room full of people.
So I'm just going to go ahead and say, if you're in a group of people or even one-on-one with a person and they're asking you to divulge all of your vulnerabilities and trauma to them for some, like, trust exercise or whatever, fucking don't do it.
Yeah, now we know.
Yes, yeah. Now we know.
Always a red
flag. Now we know.
It's very easy for acting instructors to utilize because acting is all about vulnerability. It's all about accessing your emotions and using the experiences that you actually have within you. So I see the justification for it. Like, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. You got to, like, get it all out there and lay all out of your feelings out on the table or whatever. But, like, that's not the way to do it. You don't have to divulge your trauma to anyone who you don't decide to do that to on your own.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the problems there is that there is, you know, a percentage of techniques that she's using that are great and correct and whatever. Yeah. They're just so mixed in with her absolute inability to have empathy. And you get like a really odd little mixture.
Yeah. And she does say, if you ask her, she'll say this in open classes. She'll say, I don't have a technique. The technique I teach is do it now. Mm. So when you get on set, you can't be like all method and be like, hold on, I'm preparing my, you know, she's like, you have, they say action, like you have to go. Mm. So what, she's like, whatever you need to do to get there or whatever I need to do to get you there, that would often happen in showcase coachings. She would direct really, really fast to get you somewhere. So it would be a little bit more intense.
Mm. But there'd be like slapping in that too, right? Like,
yeah, I did witness she in critiques. I've witnessed her telling a male student to take a female student and throw her over his lap and spank her hard.
Oh, my God.
I've also witnessed her have a group of girls line up and slap, you know, I was one of these people. I had to slap my friend. This happened twice, two different girls, in the face. And it was a line of us, like six girls, like slapping this girl. I don't remember what the circumstances were, but it was something to like fix about the person or wake them up or something. I don't remember.
Oh my gosh.
So there was that. There was also, in terms of like maybe directing a scene in a play she was directing or a showcase or even just a scene in class, if it was like a love scene or romantic scene or sex scene in any way, which, by the way, in the class there was a rule where you could not date or sleep with anyone else in class so that you felt safe and protected and that you were in like a safe environment. And then even in rehearsals, when you had rehearsals, you were not – if you kissed in the scene, you didn't kiss in the rehearsal. You just save that for the stage. So there would be instances, and I experienced this myself, where you would be directed to do something because she'll say it. She's very like sexual in her directing and her teaching, and she would direct you to do something. And there were things that I did that I felt very uncomfortable doing. But if – and I tried to like, you know what is that when you try to get a horse to go over a jump and they kind of rear back? I would kind of like rear back away from it because it was uncomfortable. I would kind of rear away from it and she would yell at you like, oh, well, I'm gonna give this because she would always double and triple cast her plays. And
I mean, she covered every base.
She would say, well, I'll give the performance to someone else. Or if it was in a showcase, she's like, well, then you're not going to perform in the showcase. And if it was a scene, it would be like, well, why aren't you doing it? Well, why aren't you doing it? And it was almost in the form of like, it felt like threat and coercion is what it felt like.
Yeah. If you always have that dangling over your head, of course you're going to listen to whatever she says because everyone wants, you want the role, you want the part. That's why you're there.
Well, you also want to avoid being publicly shamed and humiliated.
Right.
Like when I look back at the grand scheme of the picture, I'm like, okay, what are the types of abuse that exist? And I'm like, oh, there's physical. What defines physical? There's emotional. Okay, what defines emotional? Psychological, financial, sexual, cultural. And I look at all these and I read all the definitions and I'm like, there's a majority there.
I want a little bit more of a picture painted of just like the general environment. Mm. It was in her house for a while.
It was in her house for a while because in 2006, she said she called it like the betrayal where number of her students left and tried to shut her and the school down.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, all the way back then.
Yeah. Mm. One of those students later came out with a book and wrote a chapter about her. We'll come back to that.
Oh.
So when she was having it in her class, it's because she lost – she says this. She would say, like, she lost, you know, the majority of her income because all of the students left the school and she only had, like, you know, a handful of people that, you know, stayed loyal and by her side. So it was in her house for a while, and then we moved to a theater in North Hollywood, like, one day a week because classes would be Wednesday nights and then Saturdays and Sundays. And Saturdays was, like, the introductory, like – Tyro class is what she called it, and Sundays was advanced scene study. And then Wednesday nights, the two classes would come together. So she would have class at her house on Wednesdays and Saturdays, and then Sundays would be at the theater. And then it turned into Wednesdays and Sundays at the theater, and then she finally added Saturdays at the theater. And then we were at North Hollywood. It was like Lancashire and Camarillo. And then we went to another studio in North Hollywood. And then in 2018, she rented a space on Hollywood Row, where she had originally been before. I think she was at the complex.
Before the betrayal.
Yeah, they were at the complex. Before the betrayal. When everyone, I think that's what she called it. I don't remember.
No, that sounds
but
very odd.
We got the story a lot.
I know.
And I mean, those people betrayed her.
These classes were long.
They were long. They were, they used to be 11 to 2 or 3 on Saturdays, and then it switched to 1 to 6.
Uh-huh. 1 to 6?
And 1 to 6 on Sundays, and like 7 to 10 on Wednesdays, but 10 really meant midnight.
Oh, yeah, it never went.
Count me out,
midnight.
Dude.
And if you had to leave early because you thought class ended at 10, like the schedule said, it was a problem.
Oh, my God.
And if
God.
You
this makes
had
me,
to leave
I'm
early,
flashbacks.
If you had to leave early to go to work, on a Saturday or a Sunday, because a lot of actors work in restaurants and bars, then you were not continually but often enough been like, oh, well, you're losing valuable class time because you're spending time at that day job. And think if you're leaving an hour and a half early every class, that's 4.5 hours every month. And then you're missing – it's like you're missing a whole class. So are you here to act or are you here to work at a restaurant?
Wow.
And the classes are like – lunacy. As Abigail said, there's some like great things that she teaches. I didn't get to that part. It was the last class I took, she put on a record of herself singing.
I don't remember this.
From forever ago and played it on repeat and just had us listen to it. And I just got up and said, I'm going to go home now.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember this at all.
Wait, after how long of going?
Like 6 months?
Yeah. And that was the final straw for you? Do you remember what else you...
Well, I think, like, because I had been raised in a way that these red flags stood out a lot more to me, I think.
Yeah, I didn't have that. I didn't know.
Yeah, exactly, which makes me so sad because I wish I would have, like, I don't know. I wish we could have all just left together or something. It's really too bad. But you probably learned a lot. And
oh, I've learned
like,
so much. I've turned it into a total opportunity.
I see
of
this
like,
as a book, as a movie. But she just was all about herself. Like, she would give us lectures on how her hands looked young.
And the importance of – or how everyone always thought she was younger than she was because she never did drugs and, you know, moisturizer. She would go way into hygiene with the girls about the products they should use, their hair, their skin, how they should take – none of that was, like, bad information. You know what I mean?
Right.
That, it's true. If you're in Hollywood, it is very looks-based.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just remember her being like, my hands look so young because I get manicures. And I was like, cool. And then she's like, my hands are young-looking. And I was like, I know. And she just kept saying, like, she just kept, if it's about her, it doesn't end.
Oh,
so the, like, sick feeling in your stomach when it's Wednesday night and you just want to go home and you know you're going to be stuck watching one of her movies on repeat for 5 more hours and this, like.
Would you really watch things on repeat?
Not
like
repeat,
that?
But we'd watch it.
I mean, she would show movies. Sometimes she would show, like, a video like an old reel of hers. I mean, that didn't happen too often.
No, it didn't.
Most of them were like most of them were like class movies or movies we were going to watch, like a classic film. Like she has a encyclopedic knowledge of film.
Yes.
She's got some gems from the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, 60s that I've never even heard of. Stuff you can't even find on DVD. So she definitely was knowledgeable in that department.
Yes. But sometimes you just want to go home.
And there was a lot of talking.
About nothing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Or handling someone. And you had to stay and witness the handling of the person.
So did handling mean like punishing someone? Like dealing with someone's sins, basically?
Yeah. So or what was stopping them. So like if someone tried to leave class, there was often a handling. And that may have happened publicly in front of the whole class, not that often. Or it would happen privately with a few of their close friends in the class and officers. And they would say, well, I mean, it's just fear. You're just leaving because you're listening to your mother or your father or your boyfriend, and it's fear. And are you going to let that stop you? And I'm saying this in a really creepy way. It wasn't creepy. It sounded completely rational and logical. Mm-hmm. And so and so you think, oh, I guess I just have to like look at what I've done wrong or what I'm in resistance of. Resistance was a huge thing. Or where am I self-sabotaging? What am I afraid of? I must be afraid to be a winner. So that makes me a loser if I leave. And it also didn't help that if you left, everyone that was in class stopped speaking to you. And there was also a giant smear campaign created against you.
Really?
And all of your personal information was divulged in the form of what I felt like was gossip.
Yes.
Are there people – I know the article mentions a few people, but are there prominent people who take her class or have taken her class?
Prominent people who have taken her class, yes. When I left, the only prominent people that were in it were there was one girl who had recently gotten like a regular role on a soap. So she was kind of breaking out into a more prominent situation.
There were, like, some actors listed that I'd heard of, but I literally don't remember their names because they're, like, the kind of actors that you see in stuff, but they're not household names. And then something I thought was really interesting in the article was Patty Jenkins.
Quote. I don't know her, and if I ever get the chance to meet her, I'm going to kiss her feet. No, because that's too worshipy. I'll give her a big hug and say thank you so much for speaking out.
Yeah, so Patty Jenkins, director of Wonder Woman and the subsequent sequels, for those who don't know, Patty Jenkins apparently took the class because it was mandated at AFI. And this was a quote from her. She said, I took one mandated class with Gloria Gifford during my time at AFI. She was not significant in my education in any way. I did witness very questionable behavior within her community that put me off from any further engagement. So the one quote we have from a like well-known person in Hollywood is that.
Yeah. And I was like, thank you.
Yeah. Can you talk to us about the financial element?
I can, although there's not really a paper trail. In my experience, I remember I was rehearsing for a showcase, which I paid, I think, about $1,000 to be in.
I'm sorry, what?
Yes.
Wow.
And on top of whatever I spent on the costumes and props that I bought
for my
showcase.
And for the class.
Sorry, that was a showcase just for the class, like not a
Yeah, it was a showcase for the class. But I also paid every month for the class.
Wow.
I'm just explaining this. I'm not saying that this is or is not financial abuse. What I'm saying is in the rehearsal or walkthrough of that particular showcase, she said that I didn't listen or take a specific note about something, and I did misunderstand something that she said. And so I was fined $200, and I wouldn't be allowed to perform unless I paid the $200, which she said in front of everyone, but there's no email of that. So I paid the $200 and I gave it to the co-producer of the showcase or the producer of the showcase.
You don't have that transaction anywhere?
No, because it was paid in cash.
Okay.
I mean, I have an email that I sent to Gloria that says, I paid this person $100. I'll pay $100 again. Oh, or maybe I sent it to the producer. I think I sent it to the producer and said, here's the $100 of the $200. But because there's no response back, it's not anything.
For not listening
enough? Yeah. So, and I know students that had to pay for a second showcase coaching because they were acting up and not taking direction and wasting her time in the first coaching, because with a showcase, you get a coaching automatically.
So there was stuff like that.
You can't just arbitrarily make up fees. That's not a thing.
Well, also I want to point out that these are all actors who don't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
And there was one occurrence where we were, you know, in rehearsals for a play, and she always says, we're going to double cast or triple cast or whatever, so you can all still work your jobs and have your money. And for this specific play, going into it, you didn't know how much you were going to pay because it was going to be based on how much you would perform. So if I only performed a handful of times, I might have had to pay $1,000. And it was the week of the show. We were having a dress rehearsal, and I worked that particular night. But there were other dress rehearsals. And I got a text from a producer that says, anyone who doesn't come tonight will not be in the show opening weekend. You need to be here now. And I was like, this doesn't make any sense. She just said it was okay. She does this every production. Mm-hmm. She would say it was okay. And then the closer it got to the timeline, she would just complain and yell, like, no one's showing up for rehearsal. You don't take this seriously. Da-da-da-da-da. And so I faked getting sick, and I left work to race to the theater to go be in this show. So, you know, I, like, lost the money that I would have made at work because I worked on tips.
Wow. You can get, yeah.
I mean, also the way that she had people work for her.
There was a lot of fines involved.
And just like abusing people's time. Like, she would have people drive her everywhere. She would
I was a driver. I was on the inner circle.
Yeah, you were. I mean, just do everything for her.
This is labor exploitation.
It's completely, yeah, all of it. Like, go get this for me. Go get, like, she just has.
And you would
so
do it because you wanted to appease her, which I have my own, like, people-pleasing thing that I'm trying to break. So I was, like, perfectly set up to walk right into this. So it's turned into a beautiful lesson for myself about how I conduct myself and what I want to work on within myself, which is, you know, the silver lining of this dark storm cloud, which I think anyone that's been through any form of trauma, if they can do that, I just think that's, like, going to help them so much.
So the classes cost $250 to $500 per month. That's relatively standard. Multiple individuals told The Hollywood Reporter that they've paid Gifford more than $100,000 over their 10 years.
Yeah. When the journalist reached out to me to see if I would speak in the article, and I agreed, one of the first things he asked me was, how much money do you think you spent? And I was like, because I had to think about how much I added up all the money I paid for class over that 14 years. And then I thought, okay, how many showcases did I do? How many plays did I do? And I would, like, not pay my rent and pay for the play.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
What total did you get close to?
The low estimate was 80,000.
Wow.
And so it was probably closer to 100. And right. That really hurts.
Yeah.
Actors have it rough. Mm-hmm. Like, because even to just pay for regular class is incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
It adds up.
And you still have to pay money for headshots. And
to be on LA casting, submit anything on Actors Access. Mm-hmm. And then if you do get a job, you get 25% of it is immediately gone to all your reps or whatever. Mm-hmm. But so on top of the, like, standard – because it is normal to spend money on acting class. But on top of that, first of all, you never graduate, so you're in it for ever.
Right, right.
And second of all, she's fining you. She's making you pay for things that other places would not – that you're not supposed to
pay for. Or, you know, one of the way of making amends was you could just buy her dinner.
Mm, really? Mm-hmm.
Like, if we were at the theater and we were all having rehearsal – and she wouldn't suggest it, but you'd seen it done before. So you would be like, well, can I, like, pay for your dinner tonight? You're like, no, I have $20. How am I going to do this?
Megan, can you tell the car story?
Yeah, I absolutely can. So I was dating a guy when I was in this class.
I remember this.
Yeah.
Like, so well.
So he was young and dumb, and he was also an actor, and he was on a show, and he got two cars. He was leasing two very expensive cars at the time, and I was like, we lived together, and I was like, you're not doing this. This is insane.
So he was on a show at the time.
Yeah.
And
so
thought
he was
would
like,
make money forever.
Yeah, this is forever. Now I'm like, whatever. Like,
yeah.
Okay. So I was like, you're renting one of these cars to somebody because now we have three fucking cars. This is insane. And so she needed a car. And I was like, do you want to rent it from him? Yes, I do. before the car got stolen, because it did eventually get stolen, she just wouldn't pay.
I didn't know that.
She just wouldn't.
Like never?
I think she did like twice. And then I'd be like, hello, are you alive? And then finally she just wrote back and was like, car is stolen. And I was like, it's what? And then they found it in a ditch and like somewhere weird. I'm going to text David and ask this information.
I had no idea that she wasn't paying on it.
Oh, no, not at all.
So do you think it was actually stolen?
It was stolen because it happened when we were doing a showcase at the Matrix Theater on Melrose, and the car was out back. So we were all in the theater, and she was like, she comes back and she's like, the car's gone. We were like, what?
But she had not been paying
right
already.
Okay. Correct. The truth of the matter is, no, she was not paying. And I actually wrote her at one point and was like, hey, instead of me trying to collect all of this money that
Why don't you just
I
not
know,
pay your tuition?
Right. Well, exactly. I wasn't in the class at the time.
Oh,
even.
Oh.
I was like, maybe you should just give me free classes. And she was like, okay, talk to blank, one of her people. And I was like, okay. And then I wrote them and they just never wrote me back. So I know she didn't want me there being like, she didn't pay.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So this is making me think of. So because I'm an L.A. orphan, like I don't have any family here, so she would often invite all of us orphans to her house for Thanksgiving and Christmas. So I spent many holidays. In fact, I moved to L.A. In 2007, and I went home that year for Christmas, and then I didn't go home again for Christmas until last year. Because I spent every Christmas, almost every Christmas with her. The last 3 or 4 years after her mom passed away, we stopped doing holidays at her house.
Mm. But, so you left – when?
2021.
Oh, this is – I didn't realize how recent this
oh,
was.
Oh, yes. Very recent.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So she thought, I want all of you to be able to still spend Thanksgiving together. So, you know, can you make reservations at this place that I was, like, working out for 5 seconds? And I was going to be working, but the group that we normally spent time with was going to come there and eat. And I'm like, sure, no problem. I made it. And then it got shut down because of COVID. Because remember in 2020, end of 2020, they like things started opening back up in the summer. And then right before Thanksgiving, everyone was like, oh, no, shut it down again. It's going crazy. And so I had emailed her because one of the guests emailed me and said, oh, so I paid for me and so-and-so. Do you think I could get that money back? I said, yeah, you know, I coordinate it. Let me just email and just be like, oh, you know, since we're not doing this, like, you can just give me back blah, blah, blah's money and I'll return it to her. And she never responded to the email. And this person was like, did you talk to Gloria about it? And I was like, yeah, she didn't respond. Like, I'll check again. And she just never responded to the email.
Wow.
And it was, I think it was like $100.
Okay. But $100 here, $100 there, you know, that adds up, I imagine. Damn.
$100 adds up as $100.
I know, but I'm like,
no,
you can make a full living just like not responding to people.
Totally.
And she would always tell stories. I don't know if you remember this. She would tell stories about how so-and-so came after her in court or whatever, and she has to pay him $25 a week. Or I don't know the stories of the logistics. There were so many red flags that I just refused to see. And when I look back at it now, I'm like, you have these people that you tell stories about that left you, that betrayed you. Everyone's always betraying you. Everyone's always doing you wrong. Everyone's always coming after you for money that's not rightfully theirs, or you know, there's always a problem.
What's the
you have a difficult
denominator?
You have a difficult relationship with your family and your son. And I was like, something doesn't seem right here.
You're like you have really bad luck.
Yeah, like exactly. I kept thinking, how much bad luck does somebody have?
Wow. In another life, she would have been a really excellent like psychic, I feel like.
Oh, she would be so.
She actually is psychic. She's really great at reading people. And
that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Like you have that skill and you have the lack of morals. she could have done that. No one would have thought twice about it.
Why do you think you were so willing – not willing, but why do you think you were so needing her?
Oh, God. Should we go to my childhood psychology?
Maybe.
I was in a place in my life where I was like – my self-esteem and my self-worth was very much in the toilet. And I was always seeking validation and approval from others to feel like I was doing a good job. I mean, we kind of grew up in a society where it's like, oh, you do a good job, you get an award, you get good grades. Like, that's how our society is built. But I just, for any number of reasons of life and the way we all grow up, I was very much in that space and people pleasing and also feeling like I didn't have the answers and I needed somebody to tell me the answers because ultimately I didn't really want to step up and like step into my own power and take responsibility and actually trust my gut and trust what I know.
How old were you when you joined?
I was early 20s, I think.
Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, this stuff happens to people of all ages. But
yeah.
I think, like, who isn't searching
at that
for
age?
Who they are?
And I'd also just arrived in Los Angeles. A lot of new students have just arrived, or they're very young. I mean, I came later, but I know when she first started teaching, she had a lot of people. Like, I have friends that left class that started class with her when they were 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. And you're so impressionable at that age.
Yeah. Right.
Just have a strong personality and kids are like, you're so confident, you know what's going on.
Yeah, and so you just go, okay. And you know, I had a hard time speaking up for myself, setting boundaries for myself. That's something I'm still working on. So to see someone who embodied that, I thought, okay, if I am close to this person, then I will be that. And I'm also like kind of like the hopeful, I don't want to say hopeful romantic, but I'm like the hopeful optimist. I'm like, you know, if you work really hard, like, guys, we can do it. We can. I'm always like the underdog person. Like, we can make it happen. You know, love will save the world. Like very naive about human nature. I was very naive about human nature. I am not naive about human nature anymore, but I'm still very hopeful.
That's great.
Yeah, for real.
Talk to us more about the physical aspects of what would happen in class. So there's this, the slapping.
She's grabbed me by my hair and yanked my hair and, like, moved my head all around. And I saw her do that to other people and, like, pull them, like, literally pull them down to the ground on their knees, women. I didn't see her physically abuse men so much.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Interesting. I know she did slap me across like the head this way in public in a grocery store. And one time when I was seating people for a play, and I've had other people tell me they had a similar experience, she didn't like what I was doing. So she grabbed my arm and like dug her nails into my arm and forced me to move a certain way, but like did it like kind of on the sly. And I was like, what the hell is that? And I also watched her like body check women and men, actually, like try to body check them out of the theater.
Wow. Was she coercive? Like, was she telling people what to do in their lives and, like, general behavior?
Oh, absolutely.
And it wasn't like, you can't do that. It was more like, oh, well, because you were guilted and shamed. So I barely had any relationships while I was in that class. Towards the end, 2019, I was in a very short relationship. And I was trying to, like, not say anything and keep her on the DL because everybody knew if you told her she was going to, like, say, right. Well, why are you seeing this person? What do they do? And would just, well, they're a loser, you know, And so she – I had gotten a text message from him. And she would – oh, she would also invade your privacy. She would pick up your phone and be like, who's this? And I have a car with a screen, you know, so if somebody texts me, it shows up. And she was like, who's that? And I was like – oh, this guy I'm seeing? Because I was like,
damn. Oh my gosh.
I was like, I found out. It was a whole handling. It went throughout the, because this was in the afternoon as I was driving her to class that day. And we were in the middle of a production. And then it turned into, and then she roped my friend in and was like, and you're seeing somebody too, aren't you? And she was like, what? And she was. And so then we're being yelled at in front of an entire room of cast and crew that we are, you know, losing focus, that we're not having careers, we're not, you know, trying hard enough because we're in these relationships with these losers and we don't value ourselves. I'm kind of paraphrasing here. I don't remember the specifics that were said, but it was humiliating and embarrassing and frustrating. Mm-hmm. When you're being yelled at, it's very tiring.
Yeah.
And so you just want it to stop.
Yeah.
So finally you just go, yeah, you're right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she would always say, so what am I saying? You're saying A, B, and C.
Wow.
And she's like, you're just repeating what I said. Do you understand what I'm saying? And I'm like, ugh. So you had to like act like you understood what she was saying.
Wow.
It was very exhausting. And so just to like, you know, because what if, you know, you might have a performance that night Or you're sitting there yelling at me and we're about to start a play and now I can't eat because you're yelling at me and I've been here at the theater since 1 p.m. and it's 7 p.m. and now I'm going to be here till 2 a.m. and I haven't eaten since 11.
Yeah. Wow.
She would also – you would have no phones during class, which I get. Like a lot of like dance – you know, dancers, they're like, put your phones away. Mm-hmm. No phone. Court, you can't have a phone. But it was one way – you were asking about alienating before. It was one way that she would alienate is you wouldn't have access to
– for these really long periods of time,
yeah.
3 days a week. You know,
yeah. And also you could only go to the bathroom when she specified that it was a bathroom break.
This would not be good for any of the three of us.
She would also – you could only eat when she specified that it was a food break.
And what about outside of class? Having any say in whether or not you have a relationship is already like
well,
she's so incredibly intrusive.
Lose weight, change the color of your hair. Mm. You need to lose this much weight. You need to be this. You need to be that. Like,
wow. Which managers and agents will tell you that too, but not necessarily.
Yeah.
Maybe in the same way.
Right. Right.
I didn't personally have that experience with her. Mm. She may have said that to other people.
Yeah, she was. I remember my friend who was going to be on had some pretty intense experiences.
Oh,
well.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes,
wow.
I do actually recall that person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really strange.
It's just amazing how threatened she felt by any of you engaging in just a relationship with someone who's not her.
Mm-hmm. Like, well, yeah, because it would take you away from, you know. And after the handling that I had with my friend, she emailed me and my friend the next day and was like, I really just want you guys to be happy and I want you to make sure you're taking care of yourself and taking care of your career. And it was like a completely different person.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, interesting that you publicly humiliated and degraded us, but then privately you send us this on the side.
She puts it on record, the nice version of her, and the part that's not recorded is not on record.
Yeah, but I probably have that email. And she would also save every single email and print it out and have her assistant file it for each student.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like that.
So did you join Scientology officially?
I did, yeah, when I was there. Like in 2007, like very shortly after.
Wow.
And how long were you in for?
Oh, I left the same time I left her class. I was like, oh, that's that.
Wow.
I will say about Scientology, and I didn't watch any of the documentaries or what they call N-Theta about Scientology, the bad PR, black PR. I never watched any of those things until after I left.
Right.
Mm. And then I was like, oh, I'm glad I left. My experience at the Celebrity Center was every person that I worked with was genuinely really nice and wanted to be helpful. I didn't get like a weird culty vibe, but I did notice things like you would see the course room instructors like racing to get to their dinner and like racing to get back upstairs. And I'm like, God, they must work really long days. Like the first course is at 9 a.m. and it ends at 10 p.m. and they only get like 30 minutes to eat their dinner and like – It seemed like a lot, but they were also some of the like most non-judgmental, loveliest, kindest, patient, oh my God, patient people that I'd ever interacted with. So my whole thing with religion in general is it is man-made and there's a lot of opportunity to twist and contort and subvert good intentions. And this happens in every religion. With that. So I don't know whether those people knew they were part of something that is really unhealthy. And so I don't really have any like ill will towards them. I'm just like, that's not something I want to be a part of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because once you watch and read the information on it, you're like, oh, and just doing more research about high control groups and cults and narcissistic abuse and all these things, you're like, oh, wow. Yeah. This is a thing.
Yeah.
And there's, I mean, most of the things from Scientology that you learn in it, they have their own specific terminology, but a lot of it's borrowed from other religions. A lot of it from, like, they talk about engrams, which has to do with, like, hidden pain that's in these things in your unconscious mind and different energy things. And I'm like, oh, so kind of like chakras and, like once you, and because I've studied everything, I'm like, oh, so this is kind of like this over here.
Well, and Freud, I mean, he drew from so many different sources.
So many different.
I mean, he says
he was like, he was in the Navy, but he also studied like physics and quantum physics and biology and like all these other things. He studied Buddhism. And so you see where he's borrowed things from.
Yeah.
And some of the things that I did there were very helpful. And some of them I was like, well,
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you didn't have as bad an experience with Scientology as you did with Gloria.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like she was worse.
Can you just tell us when you started thinking that there was something really actually wrong?
It started in the pandemic because we weren't physically
interesting.
In the environment. Mm. We were on Zoom. Mm. I was still seeing her, though, because I was on the inner circle. So I would do work for her one day a week. So I would see her one day a week. And my best friend had left class early on in the pandemic. And we, like, loosely stayed in connection. And, you know, because she was, like, traveling. So it started with the pandemic when we weren't physically in the environment of the theater and around her 24/7. Mm-hmm. I was still seeing her one day a week because I was in her inner circle and I was doing work for her. But one of my friends left early in 2020. And I started to notice the smear campaign that happened against her. And this woman started saying, well, she's doing this and she's doing this. And I would be at her house, you know, doing the work that I was doing. And she would say, well, you know, so-and-so met this person and that's because this and this person in class said that he saw this about her. And everything that she was saying was not accurate. And I knew it wasn't accurate because I was still in touch with this person. And I was like, that's really weird. I wonder if all the things she said about people in the past that left was true. So I just started to notice, like, cracks in the stories.
Yeah.
And I went, okay. And my friend was, you know, guys, this isn't a good environment. Guys, this isn't a good environment. And actually, some of us had a conversation about it that we're still in class. And I was like, I think something's wrong here. So I, on my own, went out, found this book called Out of the Fog, and I listened to it on audio. And it gives an example of narcissistic abuse. Every chapter is about a different element of it, and then it shares a client example because it was written by a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I'm not sure.
Oh, I can't wait to read this.
It's great. Mm. And every single example I read, I was like, wow. Mm. And I also watched a documentary about that sex cult, Nexium. Mm-hmm. And I was like, a lot of the behavior traits and the way that he talks to people, not the sex cult part, is feeling familiar to me. So just all these little cracks in the reality, which is a very traumatic thing to believe the world is one way.
I can't.
That my world is one way. And then all of a sudden you see it's not that way at all.
Yeah.
And I honestly had like a breakdown.
Yeah, I bet.
It's like it's your whole reality is flipped upside. And there's actually a podcast with a doctor, and she interviewed one of the guys that made the Nexium documentary, Mark Vicente. And uh-huh. He says, imagine the person that you love the most in the world and that you trust the most in the world. And now imagine someone telling you that they're just like evil and a murderer and all those things. How does that make you feel? Watch that resistance. Mm. I'm like paraphrasing him. But I was like, that's exactly how it felt. Mm. It's exactly how it felt. And so I was like, oh, my God, I got to get out of here. I was like, I got to get out of here. And once I had that realization, I started doing all this research on my own. And I was like telling my friends, I read this book. Holy shit.
Mm. Yeah.
And I was like, let's go. And I set a deadline for myself. And I was like, I have to be gone by this time. And I was like, I'm going to do it no contact, and I'm going to send an email, even though she hated that. And she said everyone always left her that way because no one ever left class on a good term. They always blew.
Right.
Even if she still spoke kindly of them, she would say, well, they blew because they just couldn't hack it or they had fear or whatever. But everyone always blew. No one ever left.
Right. There's no reason you could ever leave.
Because they were working on a series and they didn't have time.
Right.
It was like they're evil, they're a cunt, they're mm-hmm. in resistance or fear or whatever. So I eventually just crafted this email. I knew I was going to need a therapist, so I hired a therapist right away.
Smart.
And I was like, I'm going to need help through this.
Yeah.
And at first meeting I had with her, I was like, yes, I'm thinking of leaving, and this is everything that's happening. And I was like, so I'm going to go, and I'll see you next week, and then I'll plan out how I'm going to go. Next week happened. I go, well, I already left. I couldn't wait. And she was like, okay.
How did you leave?
I sent an email.
Right. Okay.
I sent an email. She immediately called me. She immediately called someone else. I received text messages from a couple officers. I responded to none of it.
Yeah.
Mm. I stayed somewhere else for a few days because I was afraid that people would show up at my house because I had a friend that left in 2018 where our friends, not me, but a group of our friends, were told to go show up at her house.
Wow.
They actually showed up at her workplace.
Wow.
She snuck out the back, and then they showed up at her house.
That's so scary. Really taken a page from Scientology book also.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
just like tried to be like, you're making a wrong choice.
Mistake. Yeah. You're fucking up. And we know that you fucked this person. They were like screaming at her. And she's like, what?
Would she threaten with people with like releasing their secrets? Was that a thing?
No, she wouldn't threaten them. But I mean, most of the secrets were released anyway after you left to create the smear campaign.
Yeah, there's no threat. You just know it's happening.
Or it's released in the middle of a critique.
Right.
And everyone knows your business all of a sudden. Right. Or she used to tell me all kinds of people's secrets when I was driving her. And I was like, that's interesting. Why are you telling me that?
Violation.
Yeah.
But I'm sure at the time it felt like, wow, she must really trust me. Yeah.
Trust me.
Let's all say it together.
Trust me.
Wow. She really, really, really is not a nice person.
She's a deeply damaged person.
Yeah.
Ultimately, and this is where I see, where we see, I think the trauma continues to happen because people don't heal their own trauma. So whatever happened to her, like there are days where I experience anger and there are days where I actually was like reading one day because I was experiencing a lot of like anxiety, a lot of like social anxiety. I was hyper vigilant about people and I felt like I couldn't trust anybody because this has only been just over a year.
Yeah.
And I was like feeling like I was like losing my sense of reality and I was like, okay, what's going on? So I was just like reading and talking to my therapist and I was like reading about PTSD. I went, I've experienced a lot of those things. Mm. I was like, that's really interesting. Mm. But I don't also want to like sit in any of that. I'm always like, I'm going to fix it and it's going to be okay. Right. I want to get out of that.
Right.
And so I just delved into like all forms of healing that I could find, like energy healing and meditation and Reiki and like all of this stuff. And I just started EMDR therapy.
Great.
We've both done it.
Yeah, which I'm like, I'm watching a blue ball on a screen. This is interesting. Literally just started.
Oh, the screen version doesn't work for me. I had to do the audio version on Zoom. Actually, in person, the hands buzzers.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I have a ball with noises.
As long as you have the noises.
Yeah, because I told her I wanted both because I didn't want it. But I also do tapping as well. So I'm like, let me just do everything.
I sometimes listen to the MDR things and tap at the same time with affirmations on. And I'm like, get out of me.
Because ultimately I think, I'm like, okay, the biggest thing like that I got out of this is like I know so many people that are still angry. I know people that have massive PTSD dreams about it. Yeah. And they've been gone way longer than me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't want to sit in anger or vengeance or blame of this person because, hey, I didn't wake up and I could have woken up at any time. But when I did, I was like, well, I'm fucking going.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, well, I don't want to take what I internalized and then pass that off to someone else. And I also think it's really important for when this happens to people to speak out about it so that it doesn't continue happening.
Yeah.
And also so that people that it has happened to don't think they're fucking crazy. Because I thought I was crazy.
Right.
And when Patty Jenkins spoke out in that article, it was so emotional for me because I was like, I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
I'm not crazy.
Well, the fact that there was an article at all and that many people had things to say must have been really validating.
Yeah. But it's shocking that she still is teaching and still has a class.
Wow.
And many people. Or is it? Yeah, exactly. Right. It's Hollywood, guys. Yeah. They kind of glamorize that.
And many people what? Sorry.
Many people, obviously, they all like stop talking to you and they block you and all kinds of things, which I don't want to see what they're doing anyway.
Yeah.
They like block you and you're like, okay, I don't care.
No, all I did was not like our acting instructor. Why? What is this? What is happening? Yet
I have to be there for the rest of my actual life.
What?
I have to go or you can't be like, my friend.
I didn't get permission to leave, so now I'm the enemy.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So a lot of people, which I was shocked at some of the people that said this, were like, oh, well, yeah, I knew it was kind of like she was hard on some people because she wasn't tough on everybody to the same degree. And they would say, well, I mean, they kind of let it happen to them. So that's why she – and I was like – and if the anger flared up because I was like, are you going to victim shame?
Yeah.
You're going to say that you witnessed this happening and just because it didn't happen to you that that's okay? And a friend of mine that's no longer in the class as well, she pointed out, and she said, you know, the people that stayed after the article that were there when we were there, it's really hard if you read that and you see that and you know that it's abuse. But because it didn't happen to you, you're like, well, you know, it's okay. And it's like, if you were to sit there and say, I support this person, the dissonance that you probably experience, mm-hmm. what are you going to do? You're going to admit to yourself that you're a coward and that's why you're staying? Right. Or are you going to get mad and angry and blame and hate the person? Because that's easier.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That the discomfort of that cognitive dissonance is so extreme. Like, it makes sense why – I mean, so many people in cults do this. They double down when the information comes at them that is uncomfortable.
Yeah. They're like, no. And I'm like,
everyone,
okay.
Even, yeah, me, all of us, I feel like.
Yeah.
You know, like,
no, it's just human. Yeah.
It's what it is. So I'm just like, all right, you'll wake up or you won't. You know, that's fine. But I just feel it's really important for anyone that was in that experience or any experience like it to just always speak out and not speak out in anger and hate and blame, because then that message just gets lost and it just creates, you know, a fight that's irrelevant.
Yeah.
It doesn't solve anything.
Yeah. People just need to not be harmed, and that is the goal.
Yeah.
Right.
And then when they are, they need to work on healing it for themselves so that it does not continue.
Yeah. Yes. I think I phrased that badly. But my point is, when we speak out, it is to prevent people from being harmed as opposed to just like taking down the person.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Steve wanted us to circle back really fast. Who wrote a chapter about her? What was that whole?
I don't remember the name of the book, but the actor was, can I say his name? I don't even know him. His name's Dante Bosco. And I knew that she had spoken about it in class. So I knew that he'd written a chapter about it. And so it was right before I left. I was already planning on leaving and I read the chapter and I went, oh.
He's saying something. What are you saying, Steve?
This is Rufio that she's talking.
He's Rufio?
Yeah.
Wait,
it's my favorite movie.
I love Rufio.
He's my crush.
He was my crush.
No,
mine. Okay.
So he wrote a very brief chapter that was very, you know, it was he just talked about the complications in his life and his relationships having been with her since he was a kid. Because he was with her for like almost 20 years, like him and all of his siblings. And she would tell the story in class, like, because he was one of the people that left in 2006. But I only ever heard her side of the story. Mm-hmm. So when I read that little chapter, I was like, oh. And he credited her with a lot of things, but then also said, you know, I struggle. Like, I don't know if it was right or if it was wrong. So he really wasn't coming from a place of blame or anger either. It was just sort of like putting it out there. And I was like, huh, interesting.
Interesting. So what have you learned?
What have I learned? Anytime anyone says that they are the soul answer and soul expert about whatever it is, be skeptical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or asks you to divulge all of your vulnerabilities and dark secrets right up front.
Me as an oversharer, though. Anyone who goes on a date with me.
Too. You're like, so anyway, I was in this cult for 14 years.
Tell me about your trauma. that all sounds good.
Tracks.
Yeah.
And just, I think if everyone would do due diligence and research on emotional and psychological and narcissistic abuse. I mean, narcissistic abuse is kind of trending right now, which is fortunate and unfortunate because people tend to ignore things that are trending often, or they forget about them after they're done trending.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's been in existence way before, and it will continue to be in existence way after.
Absolutely.
Because I didn't know what any of these things were. Like I was telling you, I didn't know what these red flags were. I had no idea that this existed in human nature. Like you see on the news, like, oh, somebody murdered somebody or somebody went to jail for embezzlement. But you don't, like, think it's going to happen to you.
Right.
And I also learned that because nobody signs up and is like, yeah, I want to be part of, like, a high control group or a cult, whatever. It usually comes from wanting to, like, believing in something greater than yourself and wanting to be a part of that change or that improvement.
Yeah.
And then somehow you just get whoo, whoo.
Yeah. I have nothing to say to that, but yeah, apparently. No, but I think it's amazing that you're speaking out about this. And God, I'm so sorry that this much of your life went to this person in this program, but it sounds like you have really come out on the other side in a really positive, constructive way.
Yeah, trying every day. Everyone should funnel their pain into any creative outlet they find.
Are you writing a movie about this?
No. I don't know if I want to stay in it in that way. I kind of want to just move on.
Okay.
But I did start a new acting class.
What is it?
What is it? And then that really made me go, oh, wow, this is what an acting class is like. It's always like, you know, we're really respectful. If you feel uncomfortable with something, say it. You don't need to. And it's actually what an acting class, I think, should be. You're not learning how to act. It is simply a playground for you to explore together. So the teacher even says, I'm not like teaching you, I'm not your guide. We're like collaborating here.
And I'm like,
that's really interesting. Like, I'm creating an environment for you to discover the answers. And so I, through that class, have really realized, oh, this is my point of view as an artist. Okay, that makes sense. I had the opportunity to write something. I started painting again, and so I've created a whole series of paintings.
Cool.
So anytime I just, like, I'm like, okay, I need a positive outlet for this. I'm all for art being therapy. So.
Absolutely. Same. Wow. Yeah, that sounds like such a healthier environment to be in. It really should be collaborative, and it should you should be able to have boundaries.
Yeah. She talks Good about Lord. Boundaries all the time. You're like, really?
Nice.
Like, okay, great.
That's awesome. Well, can people find you on social media, or is there anything you'd like to share?
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, Abigail on Fire. I post sort of often.
Yeah.
Sort of often. And then my art is on sacredhealing_art.
Oh, cool. We will check it out. Thank you for joining us and telling us
Thank
your story.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
So, Lola, let's try something different this time.
Okay.
We already know if I would join the class because I did join the class. What about you? I'm going to ask you, do you think that you would join this class?
My, how the tables have turned. I think that I could end up in this class very easily because I don't really know. I'm not like, I think I said this already in the interview, but I'm not like an acting class person. So I would just be like, hey, pals who act.
Mm-hmm.
I like need to brush up on my acting. Where should I go? And I would probably just take whatever recommendation they gave me because I'm like, I don't know. It's an acting class. Who cares?
I mean, like, it's pretty easy to have your acting class be culty.
Yeah. I mean, that is the thing. Although the class that Abigail was talking about at the end sounds like a much healthier way to approach that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't think it would be something that I would want to stay in for very long because for the probably the same reason that you didn't stay, which is just that, like, I get so anxious about my time.
Yeah.
And if I feel like something is like taking hours and that, like, I'm like, I have to go write my script.
Yeah.
If it were a screenwriting or like a directing thing, then I think maybe I would be more inclined to like stay a bit longer.
I'd give it a few more hours.
I do love acting though, you guys. Cast me.
Okay, but don't expect me to prepare. Just kidding. Yeah, I can see that. You would probably join it and then you would probably also leave it just like Abigail and I ended up doing. And for anyone who is still in the class, maybe listening, you can always contact me to either say that you hate me or thank me, whichever. All good.
Or both at once. Whatever.
Or both. Yeah, whatever. But listen, we can't wait to see you here next week. You know what I'm going to say. Remember to watch out for red flags.
No.
Remember to follow your gut. Watch out for red flags.
And never, ever
trust me. Bye.
Bye. Trust Me is produced by Kirsten Woodward, Gabby Rapp, and Steve Delamater.
With special thanks to Stacey Para.
And our theme song was composed by Holly Amber Church.
You can find us on Instagram at Trust Me Podcast, Twitter at Trust Me Cult Pod, or on TikTok at Trust Me Cult Podcast.
I'm Ula Lola on Instagram and Ola Lola on Twitter.
And I am Megan Elizabeth 11 on Instagram and Babraham Hicks on Twitter.
Remember to rate and review and spread the word.